Greetings, I'm Josh Tyson, co-author of Age of Invisible Machines, the first best-selling book about conversational AI. Age of Invisible Machines explores the learnings of industry veteran and OneReach.ai CEO Rob Wilson. Each week, Rob and I bring in a guest to continue the conversation we started in the pages of our book. This week on the Invisible Machines podcast, we're talking about augmenting human collaboration in hybrid work environments, the unexpected intimacy remote work has introduced, and why the meeting begins long before the meeting begins. Our guest is Gary Sorrentino, global CIO of Zoom. Gary spends lots of time thinking about ways that technology can amplify human-to-human collaboration as hybrid work environments continue to evolve. According to Gary, humans are in a joint venture with the technologies associated with conversational AI. There's much work to be done, and we explore ways that asynchronous work can bring different generations of workers closer together. Let's jump right into this conversation with Gary Sorrentino. Invisible Machines is produced in partnership with OneReach.ai. Their Generative Studio X platform is the only orchestration platform that's been named a leader by every major analyst group. Enterprises and other organizations are already using GSX to create technology ecosystems where they can grow their own digital teammates, called intelligent digital workers. These IDWs can be set to work with hundreds of customizable skills utilizing GSX's no-code building tools. Head to OneReach.ai to test drive an IDW and experience the next phase of generative AI. All right. Well, Gary, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. We are very eager for this conversation.
Me too. Let's talk about some really good stuff.
All right. Yeah. And Rob, you know, always a pleasure seeing you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Gary, we were having kind of a fun conversation before we started this call. And we do have a lot of things we'd love to talk about, but we were thinking about like the way that Zoom kind of facilitates human to human communication in this rich way, starting with like ease of scheduling, you have ease of connection, the richness of the experience that people have when they're in Zoom meetings. It's all kind of accounted for. As we see a shift towards AI kind of taking part in these conversations, in these meetings, do you see the goal as trying to preserve the qualities of human to human collaboration? Or do you see AI as a tool for sort of augmenting our abilities?
Look, we always want to maintain human-to-human conversation, right? That is the best, right? I think AI is going to be a catalyst to help us take out some of the mundane, like make me look good, center me in the screen for me, right? Mm. Translation is very important today. Transcriptions are very important today. Why, when I'm meeting with someone, why can't I have a meaningful conversation and not worry about taking notes? And so what I think today is really about, how are we going to augment that human experience? Because, look, there's always going to be a hybrid work environment, right? We're not going back to the way it was, right? So more and more people will work hybrid. Now we have to make sure that that hybrid experience, let's say where we are now, we're in three boxes. We have complete equity. We're in three boxes, okay? So everything works now. But we also have to make sure that Zoom is there when you decide to go back into that place, whether you call it an office or a collaboration center, because you also want to have that equity when there's four people in a room, right? And when I go into the room, now we're going to replace human-to-human conversation. I want to look at you in the room. I don't want to play to the screen like an act. Okay? So that's where I need AI to kick in and say, okay, Gary, you're going to face the person across the table, but I'm going to take not your profile. I'm going to take your face, and I'm going to show everybody your face because I don't want people to say, who said that? So the goal is, okay, we need human-to-human connection to be the most powerful thing, but we need it to work in a hybrid mode. And it's very difficult the way conference rooms are designed or the way that people want to engage. And so I think AI is going to be that catalyst that says, okay, how do we put the human back into the, imagine this, how we're going to use technology known as AI to put the human back into the call or the meeting.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's the exciting part, is like enhancing human connection versus replacing it. And it's so easy to take this into that place of replacing it, because we sort of get enamored by the fact that it's so human-like. You know, we go, wow, look, I can have a human-like conversation with a machine. It's really a party trick, right? I mean, at the end of the day, our conversations are about building connection, and building connection with machines is not necessarily an objective to an end, right? It's just a machine. It's not going to ultimately have our back someday. It's not a family member. It's just a transaction. And with humans, every transaction is part of an overall relationship that we're building. And so, yeah, having AI enhance our relationships versus replace them is such this fine line. And Zoom is interesting to me in that, you know, as we look at, you know, Josh was talking about in our last meeting, he heard the Skype sound, and that familiar, and it was like nostalgia. We were all like, oh God, remember that? I'd almost forgotten Skype entirely as a thing. And then we heard that sound, and it was sort of, I don't know, nostalgia, not nostalgia for me in the way that I wanted it, but nostalgia and like, oh my God, I remember that. And when I, you know, think about why did those things go away, and I think about why Zoom is such a big deal. I think about this idea that our communication channels, we want them to be invisible. We don't want them to be in between. We don't want to think about them. We just want to communicate with someone. So I don't have to memorize a code. I don't have to go into an interface. I just want the meeting to almost conjure itself as closely as it can to me thinking about it and exist and then disappear into the background, which is an interesting challenge from a UX standpoint for Zoom to say, like, how do you offer other features and be present when really your success comes from being invisible and just working?
Well, but it goes back to technology should be transparent, right? It worked the way we work. We shouldn't have to work the way it worked. And I think that's where the transparency comes from is, you know, you want almost that button to be where you need it to be. You want that part to come on when you need it to be. I don't want to tell it about lighting. I don't want to tell it about centering, right? I want it to take care of all those things. And, you know, I look at AI, there's three ways. There's what's happening right now, where it be centered, good lighting and things like that. We had that 4 years ago. We just didn't call it AI, okay? So that's a form of AI today. We probably called it good programming back then, right? Predictive analytics, remember old machine learning. Then there's the AI where it has a controlled input and output. And that's what we're seeing a lot more people use, because that's where I speak, you put it voice to text and translate it if I need it translated. Very, very clear. Same thing with summary. I speak, you listen, we all speak, we summarize. And then there's the part that people are, that I think they confuse everything with, is generative AI. That's the part where we're starting to act like a human with that. And that's really happening more about on the side. Like if you're preparing questions for this, you might say to generative AI, I'm meeting Gary Sorrentino. What does he talk most about? Hey, here's an abstract. Oh, that's cool. Okay, now, what are 10 questions I'm going to ask Gary just by you looking him up? Oh, that's cool, right? So those are the parts that help us prepare. But when we're actually in the meeting, the AI that takes over, like we talked about before, eliminating the clap, or there could be a dog barking, or it could be that people are eating, you know, you could be eating potato chips and no one can hear it, right? Really where the value comes, keep that human connection fresh to make it so it's not getting bothered by those other noises that used to go on. Remember, come on, it used to be audio calls, right? At the end of the day, I wouldn't want to be the other side of a conference room audio call, because all I hear is paper and potato chips and nobody's even acknowledging I'm there, right?
Right. But invisible.
We used to look up, like we'd see that person in the speaker. I don't know why, right? And we'd walk out of the conference room and we'd forget to shut the Polycom off because that person was not part of the conversation.
Right.
And I think today that's really where we have to be, is that the AI has to say, okay, and the whole meeting itself has to say, how do I make this so that everybody has It's not equality. Equality means we have one. It's equity. Everybody has what they need so they can be an active participant and add value in their own way. Some add through chat, some add through voice, some add through emojis and things like that. You know, they make their hands move, right? But we all add value in the way that it works for us. And a company like Zoom says, okay, but it doesn't matter how you communicate, whether you're a verbal communicator, whether you're a chat communicator, or whether you're an emoji communicator, but it all works for everybody. And we all meet in the same place, yet we all come prepared to be what we think is our best way of adding value.
We were kind of talking about this too, like how do you incentivize people, I guess, to come into a meeting place? So we had a conversation recently with Emily M. Bender, and she's one of the co-authors of the Stochastic Parrots paper. She's a staunch critic of LLMs. But we were talking with her because we've been using LLMs to help summarize text and conversations with some success. But she made this point that friction is actually kind of an important part of the design process there, because if people start taking these summarization tools for granted, or just assuming that they're doing a good job, you could lose out on a lot of information. You could lose out on people with certain accents that it doesn't pick up, or people with a stutter. You could run into a scenario too, where if people who are skipping the meeting because they know the summary's being conducted, you know, that those people might tend to be people who are the decision makers. And so they might even be missing out on someone just uttered a single sentence that didn't make it into the summary that could have, you know, massive implications on a project. So it seems like part of the struggle too is to make that meeting room inviting, right? Because the summarization aspect is a great feature, but it also comes with some downsides.
Well, but you say meeting room. So the meeting room is two places. It's physical or virtual, right? So we have to make both equitable where people want to come in. Got that. I was just at World Government Summit and I ran a panel on AI and I learned a couple of things. The first thing I learned is, in order for AI to be successful, humans are going to be in a JV with AI. It's a joint venture to make this. Now, it was said more elegantly because later on, there was someone presented and it said, the secret to making AI successful, and there was a pause in the room, is humans. Because humans are going to determine quality, and quality is going to determine value. And we still need the humans at this point to determine quality so that we can realize value. And I think people need to remember that this is just like, think about the self-drive car, still got to keep your hands on the wheel. Okay, yep. Today, and this is a technology, okay? This isn't a replacement of humans. This is a technology like anything else, right? And it's new, right? We all see it in 2023 and kind of touched it. But in 2024, it's not enough just to turn it on. You have to operationalize it the correct way. You have to teach people how to use it. You have to make sure that, hey, we need to make sure it's a quality product, right? Because look, sometimes it lies to you, not on purpose, right? But it's part of the training process. And I agree with what you said is people are going to have to evaluate it and say, hey, wait a second. He said we are buying at, not we're not, right? And that can change the whole context of the summary, right? Because then the rest doesn't make sense. So I think realizing that humans and AI are partners. It's a partnership, right? For the part where the transcriptions and the generative part come in. Come on, most people, when I went to generative AI the first time, I asked the key question, who is Gary Sorrentino? I learned something about myself. I said, that wasn't true. It said something about an award I had won. I went and looked at the site. I did win the award. The only person that didn't know was me. So there were truths and not truths there. But you know what? That's the partnership, right? We always say trust but verify. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we have to have people look at it, that for right now, it's not going to be 100% correct. Very, very high, but not 100% correct. And that we still need the human involvement. We still need the human creativity. We still need the human person who's curious. Why did he say it like that? And I think if we can put all those together, that's where success is going to come from the end. And more people will start relying on it as a business aid rather than just a tech.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge, right? Because the more that I delve into AI, the more I find myself delving into the more core questions of humanity. And it just takes us there, like whether this is something I want to spend my time doing or not. And I, if I go to the the meeting space and I delve into higher value, I have to ask myself, what's the point of a meeting? Why? Is it all productivity or is it connectivity? Are some of the points of meetings just so that we get to know each other better as a team and work better as a team? It doesn't matter what the action items are. Does it matter what the summaries are? It matters if you skip it. How do you connect if you're not there? And how do our tools start to acknowledge that our work isn't just purely about the things we can measure and purely about making widgets, but that there is a facilitation in the quality of communication that happens. And when I think about Zoom meetings with, you know, many folks and customers, it is really all about that connectivity, right? And that connection. And so how do you summarize that? How do you summarize, you know, that two people connected and moved the relationship forward? And does all of this sort of just start to either, does it make us discuss and become more aware that connectivity is a big part of this? Or does it make us over index on, you know, action items and work, you know? I don't know, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I might look at it this way. Do we really need the meeting in some cases? Sometimes we have meetings just for meetings, right? Once we build capital with our peers, right? A lot of times meetings are just status meetings, right? But think about the way Zoom looks at a meeting. When you have a meeting, say you schedule a meeting for next Thursday, when does that meeting start? And don't say next Thursday. That meeting needs to start the second you put it on the calendar, right? Now a chat needs to open up for that meeting. Now I get to look at the agenda a week before, and in the chat I go, hey, I didn't know, you know, if you know this, but item two is already complete. Someone else says, yeah, item two has been complete for about a month now, but why are we not talking about item three? Someone says, well, wait a second, here's all the details on item three. Now Thursday appears. Maybe we don't need the meeting. Maybe the meeting was just to give someone a deadline. Sometimes middle managers will do that, right? So that they know that they'll get what they need. So what if we change it around and we say, look, how do people work together? And asynchronous work is like taking off right now. I know for me,
that's where I was going to go. This is very asynchronous, synchronous. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, why can't people add value? So now the second I set the meeting next Thursday, that night, I have value from a meeting that hasn't started yet. Okay. And when that meeting comes, we can bring the chat into the meeting and we could agree that next week we're going to meet, but people in different time zones or people, remember, not everybody are verbal thinkers. Not everybody are verbal communicators, right? Now I have people in between the meetings adding huge value to whatever the meeting outcome was, right? Say it's, I don't know, what color to paint a car, right? All of a sudden, people was putting data about the different color schemes from different countries and, you know, the different generations who like this color over this color that I wouldn't get in the And really, then the purpose of the meeting is to exactly do that at a high level. Let's exchange where we are. Let's see if there's something we need to do. Let's build some human capital. I agree with that, right? Both in person and virtual, and you can build human capital both ways. And then let's continue on asynchronously, right? But to tell you, the meeting doesn't ever start, but the meeting never ends.
Right.
We
had a conversation with the founder of Kayak. And
Paul English, yeah.
Yeah, Paul English. And he revealed that he did, on average, sends out about 100 emails a day, which reveals in my evaluation to the fact that most of his work is asynchronous. And in that light, he gets a lot more done because it's asynchronous, and it feels a lot like being a coder. It feels a lot like, you know, the whole JavaScript promise thing where, you know, our processor now is not being tied up waiting for a response. We're off sending other requests, and then, you know, when that response comes back, we're more efficient. So asynchronous work is way more efficient. We get more done, we communicate more. But is there a cost of connectivity that gets lost? Or does it matter?
But is there a benefit of people getting to work on their own time, right? I might have childcare.
Right.
So I get on 6 o'clock in the morning. I answer all those silly chats from the middle of the night, right? I go take care of childcare. I come back at 10 o'clock. I drop out at 3. I came back 6 o'clock at night. At the end of the day, though, I think the trade-off is this. You have to build human capital somewhere, right? I got that, right? But the problem also is we don't really need it all the time. Say, like, I worked in a large bank. If I was on the 20th floor and the meeting was on 30, I joined virtually. I'm not walking up two floors. Did it matter if I was on the 28th floor or in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
It didn't matter, right? So we've always started to work asynchronous. Now we've just made this, what I say the other day, we made the string between the two cans a little longer. And we made it so that that can be anywhere in the world now, right? Because you don't know where I am, nor do you care.
Right.
But we're able to do positive, good value work regardless of our location. Right. Now, it would be great someday if we met in person, because I do still believe in personal human capital, right? But at the end of the day, it also matters that we're moving the ball forward. But I'm also getting to work the way I feel comfortable and I add value, because that's very important to me. Remember, during the pandemic, you know what I learned? I learned how I want to work, when I want to work, and from where I want. And you're not going to change that, right? Because now I saw that I could be productive somewhere. Right? You know, I might want bigger monitors. You might want smaller monitors, right? I might want to work later at night because I do my best thinking, you know, with a cup of coffee, 10 o'clock at night. I might not do my best thinking. You see people on the call, 8 o'clock in the morning, who should never be on that call at 8 o'clock in the morning, right?
Right,
you don't
right.
tell them, hey, get up at 6 and put two cups of coffee in you before you get on this call. But they're just not morning thinkers, right? But now, working asynchronously, they can figure out, when do I work most efficient? And
right,
I think it's really important with that part. So there's a trade-off about, am I building human capital by not going into that building, right? And, or am I adding value, and what's the trade-off? You know, I San Jose at once a quarter. I love meeting with people, right? Having a cup of coffee and things like that, right? But at the end of the day, it builds a good bond. But I'm okay in between to work asynchronous.
So I guess there's an argument to be made, like everything comes back to balance, right? You don't want to go full asynchronous. You also don't want to go full synchronous because it's not efficient. And striking that balance of, and I think you brought up something that I think is super important, which is in the beginning of a relationship, synchronous interactions more important because we're building that, that sort of social connection and credibility. But over time, asynchronous, can sort of dominate more because we've already built that social capital and we already sort of, you know, understand each other and therefore can kind of change to a different mode. And I guess striking that balance is the key, like anything, and trying to figure out, you know, when should you meet synchronously? Is there some rules that you think of that are like, here's when it should be synchronous and here's when it should be asynchronous?
When it's time when, you know what, we just need to take a break. We need to go out for a beer, right? Sometime, you know, colleague, let's just go for a Starbucks or something like that, right? But, you know, we can build human capital. Think about during the pandemic. I don't know how many people work for you. Say 10 people work for you. You might have passed their desk and you saw a picture of the kids and a picture of the significant other, maybe the dog. But during the pandemic, you talked to the kids, you talked to the significant other, you met the dog, okay? Okay, which was better for human capital, seeing their pictures and never meeting them in person or meeting them virtually? See, so there is a balance that we can, you know, said, I know this person for 20 years, but I never knew his living room was blue, right?
Yeah, there's that interesting layer of intimacy that the pandemic introduced.
Sure, we got to meet the dog. The dog came on the call with us, right? The significant other side. You know, I said, hey, I've seen your picture for 10 years. You look so much better in person.
Yeah.
Right? Wow, I can't believe these are the kids. You had little baby pictures on your desk. They're all
nice.
Right? And I got to interact with them. And so while they heard my name as being the boss, they got to talk to me. I got to tell how great their father is or their mother is at work, right? I never would have had that chance.
Yeah. So yeah, I think to your point of audio versus audio video and how much richer that is, you just made me realize that one of the things I love about the pandemic and where we are afterwards about the, you know, the positive outcomes of it is that if your kids yell in the background now or your dog barks in the background, people aren't embarrassed or apologizing for it anymore. We're accepting that people have families and that those families make noise and
AI's
that's okay now.
Anyway, right?
Yeah.
And AI is blocking it anyway now, right? But the cat walking across the screen, you're absolutely right. People are, we're more tolerable now that we're all humans.
Right.
Nice having a cat in the chat, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great output of all of this is that, yeah, we can acknowledge that there's more to our lives than just work. And it's okay to say that to our colleagues. That's kind of interesting. Zoom's kind of seen the before pandemic, during pandemic, post pandemic, from I would say a pretty interesting perspective because you're sort of the infrastructure. So you sort of see a macro view of it. How has the pandemic changed from this, you know, from the sort of infrastructure perspective, how humans use the technology?
I think at the beginning of the pandemic, and I started Zoom just before the pandemic, people were still using these as tools, right? They weren't using them as ways to work. I think it took a little bit, because I think everybody went home expecting this was going to be a 2-week, you know, DR episode, right?
Right, right.
And then finally, I think people started to embrace this new way of communicating. Right. And to tell you the truth, with everybody being equal, including the CEO, right, people were a lot more forthright in speaking and engaging and adding value. There's no head at the table. Right. And so with no head at the table, we're all equal. People had a different voice. And I think as the pandemic went on, people started to figure out, how can I improve myself? I know I did. First thing I did was, you know, I work for a tech company, right? I got a 12-inch monitor, 12-inch laptop, and a 24-inch monitor. What am I going to do with a 24-inch? Right? I bought twin 36s, right? Because I want to be able to work. I want to be able to multitask. I want to be able to work on that spreadsheet and not close it, but I want to be able to work on that document or maybe catch up a couple of mails while the back of my brain is thinking about that. And so I learned, like, after all those years, I learned a different way of working. Where I learned, and you know what I also learned? I learned about how I want. And I figured out, you know, I come from, like I said, the banking environment. That's 8 to 5. That's, you come in the morning, you work until the work is done, right? You commute. If you didn't like where you work, tough. Today, companies are saying, okay, here's what happened. During the pandemic, you mind shifted to what value is for you, to enough where if I can't find that value, I might move on, right? But also, we're going to earn the right of your commute. When you come into that place, whether you call it work or collaboration or an office, right? We're going to make sure that there's what you need, right? I can't go back into that office with a 24-inch monitor.
Right, right.
I know where I'm productive. I know how I'm productive, right? And so I know, but I do know that I can go into the office and have a meaningful day, because what I also found out is you don't need to have a productive day. You can also have a meaningful day.
Right.
They could be building that social capital you're talking about. You know, I'm not looking at it as I wasted 8 hours in that office. I'm looking at it as the human side of me interacted with people. Okay. But tomorrow, virtually, the professional side of me is going to interact with people in a different way. Right. And so I can have both.
Yeah.
I
think what you're saying is that the virtual meeting room changed a lot less than the physical meeting room through all of this. And I agree that the office has changed dramatically, what it is, what you do there. And Zoom is just more of the asynchronous or the freedom that Zoom and virtual meetings provide. Now, my folks are interesting because they're visiting and they're visiting for a while, and they do like they do their exercise classes over Zoom, and they used to do them physically before the pandemic in person, and now they do it over Zoom, and they haven't stopped that because now they can travel and continue to attend these meetings, these exercise groups with the same people that they've connected with, which is an amazing amount of freedom. So as we look at this trajectory, where are meetings in 5-10 years? What does a meeting look like? Is it going to be the same? Like, a lot of people talk about how AI is going to change everything, but I think I'm more fascinated about what's not going to change. I think that's the more interesting question. So much is going to change, but what's not going to change?
I think humans are always going to want human-to-human interaction, right? We need it, part of our DNA. I think that there'll always be some form of those kind of meetings. I do think that the meeting will get improved, and it'll get improved for a couple of things. One, we're figuring out how to work with each other better. I think that's important, right? If anything, the future of work has really made it so we have all learned how to work better, right? And right now we're having even that, like we had white collar workers, we had blue collar workers. Now we have, what is it? No collar now it's called, or new collar, right? These are a bunch of professionals who can figure out, I don't need to do my job in that physical office. I can freelance, right? I can gig. The gig economy is going to be strong. The next generation is teaching us about values that we didn't have. They want flexibility. You know what? When you sit and talk to the next generation about the next 5 years, you know what they ask for? It's what we want. Except in our careers, we were taught not to ask for it.
Yes, embarrassed, yeah.
Right. And so now they want no micromanage. They want flexibility. They want reasonable hours. They're not asking for 35 or 40. They want reasonable hours, right? I said, wow, no micromanagement. Reasonable. I want that too, right?
Right.
You can't ask for that because I'm not a Gen Z. I'm a boomer. I'm not supposed to want that. They like asynchronous work. They like working together. And we're very much about rewarding individuals. And I think that's changing now. And so I think what we're going to see in the next 5 years is, with the onboarding of a new generation of worker, and we've onboarded generations of workers before, but I think this one, I can't wait. They're going to change the way we work in a positive way, right? They're going to make us think about the world differently. We might not go to their ideals yet, but they're good. If they make us think differently, that's the best thing they could bring, is just think differently. There are kids, we can't learn from them at home, but maybe we can learn from at work, right? At the end of the day. And so I think that they're going to push us into having higher level, more purposeful meetings, not meetings just for meetings, which is, think about your week. How many times you're sitting on a Friday night and go, I didn't get anything done this week. I was in 30 meetings. And you actually say that, I didn't get anything done this week because I was in 30 meetings. And then you sit back and you say, does that mean I don't get anything done in meetings? Right. So I think meetings are going to be more purposeful. I think that between AI, humans learning to work asynchronous, and just changing the way we work, let's take advantage of, hey, look, we've been working the same way for 100 years, right? Isn't it about time that we break it apart and said, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe there is a new way, right? Maybe it took a pandemic, a long-term pandemic, to make us refocus and think differently. Look, I say this in one of my standard speeches. The people we sent home 3 to 4 years ago are not the same employees that are coming back.
No, right? It's interesting what you say too, because I feel like I've heard some kind of despair over the missed opportunity of the pandemic in a lot of different ways. But what you're mentioning with these younger generations now just kind of demanding that base level, like that's the work environment they want. Like, they're the ones who might actually solidify some of those things that we started to see changing, that I think kind of get to the core of what we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about, is like the nature of productivity. Like what you're saying, like, do we need to change the way we think about what work is and what work is meant to accomplish and what work means to us as individuals, especially as you know, more and more sophisticated technologies are able to kind of automate away a lot of the tedious things that we once thought of as work, quote unquote.
You said, do we? I'm saying we are.
And
I think there's a big difference there, right? If we're not thinking about it, if we're not seizing this moment, right? We got the triangulation of great technology. We got the triangulation of existing workers thinking differently. And we got the triangulation of a new breed of worker. Right? Let's not lose that.
Yeah. Well, what happens though? So we had this discussion with RJ Owen, who is a lead product designer at Slack. And so they have a summarization tool that they use. Zoom has a summarization tool. And I think, you know, coming out of the pandemic, Zoom had pretty much become a verb, right? Like the way that Google is. I might say I'm going to Google something and then use a different search engine. I might tell someone, let's Zoom, and then we end up in a Google Meet. What happens to these different companies as sort of the breadth of what they're trying to accomplish requires either them becoming like the dominant communication channel or them finding some sort of interoperability? Because, you know, we have an assistant that we've created that can sit in on Zoom meetings and create summaries. And then we've been working on one that could also do that in Slack. So it actually makes a lot of sense if that agent is able to kind of operate in both worlds. So how do we innovate in that direction, or is that even a safe direction for companies to innovate in, you think?
Well, but we want interoperability. We've always wanted interoperability, right? We need some of these giants to work together. We agree with that, right? We not everybody's going to make this. Imagine if we just had one car. Right. But imagine if Androids couldn't talk to iPhones. Right. I mean, I still don't know why I get a different color when I text someone on an Android. Right. What's the difference? Right. It's just going out there. Right. Or market a different way. But at the end of the day, it wasn't like before the VHS didn't fit in the beta. Okay. But now we have competing good technology. Right. And Zoom's one of them. Right. Interoperability is important because not everybody's going to choose the same one, right? We should learn how to work together. And it's just like us learning how to work together differently. The technologies need to, look, we're all adding value. We all have different, who wants a truck? Who wants a two-door? Who wants a small car? Who wants an electric car? We all have different tastes, but we all drive on the same.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's important. Yeah, you bring up a really good point because I think about this a lot. It seems like, you know, as I look back in my long career, I can't help but think that every communication channel, vendor that was successful eventually starts expanding the channels, like trying to capture other channels. And with an inevitable hope that all communication channels will go through them, right? It's sort of the natural, it's sort of everyone goes to that place like, oh, I'm owning it in email. I'm now going to add chat, and I'm going to add voice, and I'm going to, and even in the best examples in terms of like dominance, Microsoft in its heyday still couldn't pull it off. No one succeeded at owning all channels for all companies and people, but yet everybody keeps seeming to try as if it's plausible. You know, as you pointed out, why isn't there interoperability between Apple and Android? Because both are holding out for the dream that they can own the entire ecosystem of communication for each person. Why is that not a thought that these large enterprises are going like, give it up? It's not going to happen. Like, let's give it up and get to interoperability. Why are we doomed to just continue this? What do you think?
I don't think we're doomed to continue this. I think that we are all working together. I mean, I see more interoperability between the major players now than ever before, right? You can walk into a Zoom room, and if you set it up as for a Microsoft meeting, there's one button connect, or a Google meeting, right? Those are really where the interoperabilities are. This way you can buy your favorite car, but drive on the same highway, right? It would be really dumb it would be not the right thing to do if the electric cars could only drive in one lane and the
right.
could only drive in the other, right? And I know we have some HOV lanes and things like that, but we're all going to have to drive from A to B the same, right? So I think we're seeing more and more interoperability. What'll happen is, look, everybody wants to, right? We know that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, best of breed really works. Zoom is really focused on the employee experience and the customer, right?
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, that is where we're setting our sights, right? So how do we help with that? Some people don't like Camber. Some people like Steak, right? At the end of the day, I think there'll be a couple of big players, but I do also think that the world needs to keep pushing for interoperability. I know we do, right?
Yeah.
And we should be able to choose what we want and best of breed for certain things. Like, you know, you said you wrote a client, right? Maybe, but someday you might want to look and say, I'd rather have an integrated client than a third party client. Nothing wrong with the client, right? But at the end of the day, maybe there are places where we have integration and there are places where we have interoperability. We need to make good, sound choices at the end of the day that works, that gives us the most value for our own company.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't, as far as our agent goes, it doesn't matter that it does the summary or that it gets a summary from Zoom. That's irrelevant. So long as that summary is in context of other information and data, so that a call is not transactional in nature, that it, like you said, the meeting begins way before the meeting begins, because the meeting is a subset of something bigger, a project, an idea. And so contextualizing it into the idea is ultimately where we want it. And it doesn't matter who creates the summary, so long as there is an opportunity to contextualize it. And there's also an opportunity to see it within that isolated space as well as a transaction. There's no reason either can't work. But yeah, I wonder if the same thing's going to happen with AI, where people are going to try to capture the whole picture again instead of just work together.
Well, we'll see with that. I mean, it's so new, right? I think right now there's every player in the space, right? And at the end of the day, everybody's got the better mousetrap in this one, right? And I think we have to look for what is either integrated or interoperable with what I'm using, right? Because the days of the client actually having to stitch all this together and then being responsible for when one party comes up with a new release or a new operating system change, right? That can't have that forward, right? We have to make it so that we can grow seamlessly and not have to worry every Friday night when a new release comes out, what's not going to work on.
Yeah.
I think that that's very important because that will set us back, right?
Mm-hmm.
That'll get people, look, we all understand technology and we're doing this a long time, but the normal user doesn't actually get all the trials and tribulations about what happens with technology to make it work together. And when it stops working together, that's when we're going to hit a wall, right? It's got to have to be. Some of the analysts are talking about somewhere in the middle of this year, AI might take a small pause and people might take a step back and start, okay, now let's take a step back and let's take a thoughtful next step, which might happen, right? Unfortunately, everybody runs to the next shiny coin, right? But now they'll get to a point where they start understanding it. Education is going to be the best thing for companies. Understand what your AI needs are. Understand what the AI that you own or create does, right? And understand how to operationalize it the best way, and then figure out what you need. You know, we kind of got the car before the driver's license this time.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes
sense. Right now we just need to take a step back and say, well, we will take a step back and go, okay, now what do we need?
Yeah. Do you think, you know, I can't help but wonder if when we talk about virtual meetings, it's a bit like spreadsheets. In that, like I said, my parents do exercise class. We're having a podcast. Your next Zoom meeting might be with employees, plan a project or get status on something. It's so diverse, you know, the ways people use this tool. It's all over the place, in a good way, right? And then when we saw it with spreadsheets, all of these like, companies started emerging like Airbnb, where they looked at use cases that happened within the spreadsheet or within, you know, certain general technologies like that. And then they sort of created a user experience specific for that use case. Like, I guess Angie's List was more the example of Craigslist for Airbnb, where they saw people were renting stuff there And then companies started emerging that specialized in that one use case. Do you see that happening with meetings where like there'll be like the exercise specific use case and the get things done use case? Like, does AI and making meetings more useful start to cause the product to start understanding and more specializing on what the meeting's about?
I think what we'll see is there'll be some industry verticalization. In other words, there could be a variant just made for classroom, a variant just made for healthcare, and we're seeing that, right? That's why we have an ecosystem, because people can pick up the value of Zoom and use it in their own way. I do see that. Look, there's always going to be the startup company out there, thank God, wishes us to be better every single day. But I think there'll always be the startup company who's trying to solve a piece of the puzzle. But I also think that, and industries will buy it, right? But I also do think that some of the bigger industries are not looking to just solve a piece of the puzzle. They're looking to know, what does the picture look like? How am I solving right. for the puzzle, not the piece of the puzzle? And so I think what we'll see is we'll see various different kind of companies come to the table. But I do think that the major platforms, Zoom being one of them, will think about verticalization and start figuring out, okay, how do we cater to a certain? Because there might be a widget or a control or something that a classroom needs. When we first started with Zoom, we were teaching teachers how to teach on Zoom. And I said, well, after you get all the kids into the class, lock the meeting. She goes, oh, you mean close the door? I said, yes.
She goes,
why don't you call it close the door? And you know what? Yeah. Maybe someday there'll be an overlay or a skin or something for EDU, and it will be, the waiting room will be called let children into classroom, and yeah. the lock meeting will be called close the door, and the share screen will be called Blackboard. Yeah. Something like that, right? So at the end of the day, or chalkboard, something like that will eventually probably happen. And I guess what we'll see is we'll see a change there, right? But I think that's where we'll become more fine-tuned, right?
Yeah.
With these verticalizations, which they need.
Yeah.
Which they need.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think specifically just having intimate knowledge with the complexity and difficulty of media and live media, not asynchronous media. Most startups are not suited to get the underlying technology, the reliability of video and audio live across multiple scenarios, right? So it really has to sit on top of what is a very reliable underlying infrastructure. Right. So it would have to be a surface, in my opinion, a surface that sits on top of what Zoom ultimately is a reliable infrastructure underneath.
Yep.
So whether these things sit as plugins in Zoom or as some sort of API overlay, I do agree. It makes no sense that the rest of the world reinvents the security and stability of a audiovisual platform. It is more of a layer on top that makes more sense.
And you'll see so many bigger companies who are using Zoom from an ecosystem standpoint and doing exactly that, right? They might be bringing dignitaries in from all over the world for a virtual table, round table, panel. All the dignitaries will get a Zoom link, right? Because it's a Zoom API, but they will not be presenting it the way we present it. They'll be presenting it, maybe the speaker, maybe the moderator's in the middle, maybe the moderator's a bigger picture and everybody's a little smaller below, or vice versa. Right. And because what they've said was exactly what you said, how do we get the best in breed platform? Because that's where we need the quality. But how do we then put it, display it? That's where we're good at the experience. And so how do we bring the quality of these products and the experience and the novel nature of people thinking out of the box together? And so we spend a lot of time with clients on our ecosystem for that one reason.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to see how those use cases split out, whether it's invisible and Zoom's an invisible piece of infrastructure in the background, or whether, you know, it's in obvious collaboration. But as people start to set up experiences that are tailored to very specific use cases, I think it'll be fun to see. I think it's a whole new world of apps and and a kind of a whole new way of kind of thinking about enhancing live communication for it to be use case oriented. It's kind of like in a whole area almost to explore. Yep. And it's exciting. And I do think that the open nature of these technologies will facilitate that. I think it's cool.
I also think the price of infrastructure is coming down. People can be more creative, right? We're not building $200,000 rooms anymore, right? So at the end of the day, we can experiment a little better. We can reuse. We're now designing for flexibility. So it's not like a whole, just pull that room out, put a new room in. Maybe we put, you know, a neat camera in the middle of the table and we get extra value out of it and things like that. So I think that's really helped a lot with the creativity part. Is no longer do we have to make these upfront 5-year commitments. Now what we can do is we can really start aligning with it, right? Uh-huh. Not just get rid of and start again, which I think is a valuable thing for us now, because experimentation, creativity has become cost effective, right? Can actually start to work. Hey, this huddle room for us needs to be a little different than there. There are people experimenting with, why do you need a monitor on the wall? How many of you are putting a monitor on the end of the wall? Why aren't we rethinking the conference room?
Yeah.
Who said we have to put it there? Some designer 60 years ago.
Right.
Years ago, right? So now, how do we know that that designer was correct? Because we're all cloning that design.
Yeah.
Right? How do we break the mold, think out of the box, and be creative, right? And today, we can afford to do it.
I often think about that. Why does most every meeting room look like a boardroom? Are we all board members and holding board meetings? Like, is that just a paradigm we've just like mimicked without questioning? Like, why is there a big table? And why are we all sitting around it? Like, we have all kinds of paperwork to spread out on it when we have a laptop now. We don't use paper anymore.
Yes. Yes. I guess what they figured out is they could design the boardroom. It was easier to clone it in a more cost-effective manner than it was to recreate it.
Right. And I guess there was always a bit of status, like, oh, I'm a board member. You know, I feel important.
I have a friend who does a lot of consulting with it's like a natural products brand, but their board is always in one place and he's always zooming in. And he said, it's just hilarious because the owner of the company is there, but then he's on a monitor and his head is like 5 times bigger than anyone else in the room. And he's there to kind of provide advice. He's a sage-like person, but it tilts the dynamic in the room, right? Because even though there's a whole group of people, he's there like this giant godlike figure in the room. So I guess
that's when it all boils down to, how do you define equity, right? Mm-hmm. How does everybody get what they need? And at the end of the day, what is it for the older people? The max headroom on the end of the room, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's probably not the right, that was probably a poor design.
Right,
because he becomes, you know, like Oz, right? The big picture on the end of the wall.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah,
it doesn't mean he has a better value or a better opinion. It just means he's on a larger screen.
Yeah, it's just a census thing for us. I think we're at the beginning of AI entering into the Zoom and live meeting equation. It'll be really fun to see where we are in 6 months. And
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. You know, I'm going to Leap next week, and I will tell you, you know, Leap, what did I do? I did Black Hat, I did World Government Summit, I did Davos. They're all becoming AI events.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everybody's talking about AI, right? But at the end of the day, I think we're going to get to a point where, okay, all of a sudden, no one talks about Bitcoin anymore at those sites.
I know. Well, it's funny because right now, some of the folks I'm talking to at the front of the, you know, front of the Gen AI sort of, I would say, R&D, are already talking about the end of generative in 5 years, that's going to be gone in 5 years, and that it's a flash in the pan, and it's going to be replaced by something more reliable and can do, you know, better reasoning. And
it's called Skynet.
Yeah, there it is.
Right? Well, Skynet figure out that the weakest link on the planet is the humans.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds over the next while.
And I think that this next generation is so used to dependency on technology that they will adapt and they will adopt, right? A little bigger than the naysayers. And at the end of the day, right, they're 27% are going to be here this year,
yep.
right? So at the end of the day, you know, they can have a very positive, I'm very bullish on their positive influence, right? They are so much more like us than we think. They just—
I couldn't agree more.
They just say it, right? And you want to sit back and you want to— I have a picture of the four generations working and all the pros and cons. And then in the middle, I put my picture and I go, I'm part of all four. Where do you put me? Because I've learned to take this from this generation and that from this generation and that from this generation and that from this generation. And we're not actually calling it intergenerational work. We're calling it merging multiple mindsets. Because every— look, like, you know, I don't go like this anymore. I go like this. No one but my mother knows what I'm talking about. I got to go like this. Right. So, and I've learned that chat is my best tool for getting work done. Right. Chat is my best tool. Where I worked in the banks, chat was just like— it was for the operations people. It was like, you know, any communication that was of value was an email. Now you send an email and someone goes, what is this? Why don't you just chat?
Yeah. Yeah. This has been a fantastic conversation. We took it in places I didn't expect, but I think for the better. This is great.
Good. Well, it was a pleasure. It was my pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, 6 months from now, we can do it again and say, look back and say, were we correct? Maybe a year from now, maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
From now, we can say, hey, you know.
Maybe a week from now.
Those predictions, maybe a week from now, those predictions were either, I hope, correct, but in some cases, I hope not, right? I hope that we continue the journey of discovery and we take this place where we are now and we constantly look for the best solution going forward.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Well, great.
Well, thanks, Gary.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining this ongoing conversation about conversational AI. Be sure to subscribe to Invisible Machines wherever you get your podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app. You can also watch these conversations on the Invisible Machines YouTube channel. This podcast is produced for UX Magazine in partnership with OneReach.ai. Over the past 5 years, our team of nearly 200 engineers, scientists, experienced designers, anthropologists, and linguists have been developing Generative Studio X, an award-winning platform that has the lone distinction of being named a leader by every major analyst group. GSX is a complete environment for hosting, creating, analyzing, and scaling your own digital teammates called Intelligent Digital Workers. For an interactive demo of IDWs in action and to learn more about the GSX platform, head to onereach.ai. This podcast would not be possible without the hard work and dedication of executive producer Elias Parker and producer Kate Timchenko. Our video and audio editor is Michael Litvinov, and we rely on support from the marketing team at onereach.ai, including Allison Harshberger, Anastasia Nechtalio, and Vera Prokodko. Thanks again, and we look forward to connecting with you next week, right here on Invisible Machines.